Welcome to 3GT, the podcast for three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Welcome back to another episode of 3GT. That's three guys theologizing, where three gentlemen, and I use that term loosely, get together and discuss important topics of the day. I am your one of the three co-hosts of this show, Scott Hunt, joined as always by Barry York and Kyle Borg. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Idly ho. Hey, hey, do Scott. You use gentlemen loosely for yourself or
yes.
For Barry? I'm just
not,
wondering who falls in.
Not
the
you. And I'm going to get to this, but I'm going to start calling you Esquire.
Yeah, you should.
Just remember, I was going to name the show Three Gentlemen Theologizing until I realized who my co-hosts would be. And so guys seem more fitting.
Wow, Barry. Wow. Thank you. You know, you could have said that 4 years ago or whenever when I agreed to do this with you. That would have changed my tune. So
I doubt it. Because we know how much you love podcasting, Kyle.
I do. I'm Mr. Podcast. Just remember that.
He's got an addiction.
A quick thank you, Kyle, for the shout out on the Daily Scooper, whatever it is that you do, for my birthday shout out.
Scooper. The way you guys talk about that makes it sound like a dog business, okay? It is not the Daily Scooper. It is the Daily Scoop, right?
I wonder why.
Come on, you guys. I mean, it's my children understand this, right? Like, what's the scoop? Here's the scoop. It's not Scooper. That just makes you sound outdated.
Well, you know, Kyle, you host that all by yourself. Here we have three co-hosts. We are all equal, though some are more equal than others.
Distinct. Equal but distinct.
I think you are more equal than the rest of us, Kyle. And one of the biggest, most asked questions we've gotten recently, and I want to talk about today, and I'm sure our listeners are dying to know, is whatever became of the court case that you were involved in. What's the name of that case? I can't remember. Barry, do you have any idea what the name of that case is?
Well, we have been calling it the Wandering Hound of Winchester, but I kind of wonder if there's a better name for this case.
We're going to get slapped with copyright violations on that one. But that is, you know, I was going to say the actual case name is 2020 M45. So
that's the case number, Kyle.
Well, yeah, case number, case name, isn't it? Okay, the case name is the City of Winchester, Kansas versus Kyle Borg, right? Is that the name?
That is the name of the case, yes.
All right.
When we speak of cases like Marbury versus Madison or Plessy versus Ferguson, we don't call them out by their number. We call them out by their name.
Excuse me, Kyle. Scott, I'm an amateur, okay? I'm still learning the ropes to all this, but I will say that whatever those cases you just rambled off, I trust are cases that will be known forever. I trust, I'm calling it now, the City of Winchester versus Kyle Borg will be a case that lives in fame forever.
So, really quick, Kyle, just to give our listeners an idea of what this case was about, can you give us a 2-minute synopsis of what the City of Winchester versus Kyle Merrill Borg was about?
You don't ever use my middle name. You don't ever use my middle name. That is not in the court documents. That will not be used on this podcast. All right, so you've given me 2 minutes. I'm going to do my best. At some point on Three Guys Theologizing, I think it was one of our earliest episodes, if Barry's memory can help me here, we actually talked about the pivotal role that my dog, who is a Beagle Golden Retriever mix, has in this community. His name is Huckleberry. We moved here now almost 8 years ago. From Grand Rapids, Michigan, where that's when we first got Huckleberry, and he lived in this confined backyard fence. It was a terrible life. He moved to Winchester, and he realized his glory. And Huckleberry has become a bit of a community dog. I think I can admit this now that the case has been dismissed.
Oh,
Huckleberry,
yeah.
Huckleberry's got all of his friends that he goes around and he visits. So, for instance, the gas station across the street, they keep a bowl of treats set aside just for Huckleberry. And they love having him come over. Then he wanders his way to the meat locker in town and they save all the spinal cords and rib cages for him. And the old men at the diner love watching him. When he gets one of those rib cages, he drags it down Main Street. And you can just tell he's smiling. And the old men that gather at the diner drinking their coffee love to watch him walk by. My yard has actually been turned into a bone graveyard. It's terrible. Every time I mow, I have to go through. So Huckleberry's got his friends.
This episode's going straight to Winchester. You may have gotten out of last night's court case, but there can be other ones.
Oh, they ruined it.
They need proof. I plead the fifth. So at any rate, what ended up happening is that though Huckleberry has many friends, there was a person who decided to complain to the city that our dog was out. And that person made a sworn statement and filed an affidavit where they claim that they witnessed a dog under my control named Huckleberry to be at large in the city on July 12th, 2020. Now, the affidavit wasn't signed until the end of November, but that's neither here nor there. They bore witness that on July 12th, 2020, my dog was seen at large. Well, that's a violation of city ordinances, as long as you get the right city ordinance. And so the city of Winchester filed a complaint against me. The unfortunate thing, and we'll probably get into this, they miscited the city ordinance that I violated, which is one of the reasons I had to plead innocent, but or plead just not guilty.
Technicality, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it was a significant technicality. Look.
What did they actually charge you with?
So the way that the statute reads, it is in city ordinances, it is ordinance 206, and there's five paragraphs to ordinance 206. Paragraph one is no person shall allow their dog to run at large within the city limits. They accused me of violating paragraph four, which simply reads, when the city impounds a dog, the owner shall pay $25 plus a board bill. That's what they accused me of violating, which our community hasn't impounded dogs since the 1970s, I think. And so, and I pointed this out in the initial meeting with the city prosecutor. I pointed out that this was the wrong ordinance. And he told me it was a minor technicality. And if I thought I was going to get off the hook by playing games, he was willing to go to trial with me. So I said, okay, name the date. Let's go to trial. So that is the basic gist. That's what I was on trial for. I was on trial for not paying an impoundment fee. That's according to the letter of the law. The spirit of the law is I was on trial for letting my dog run at large.
But that brings up a very interesting point that I think we can all learn from. And that's, we have to be very precise, right? If I want to put this in terms of church discipline or church issues, we have to be precise with what somebody has done and why we're pursuing them in church courts or in civil courts, why we're pursuing them in the civil courts, right? I mean, they got it wrong. They accused you of something that you clearly did not do and they didn't meet. So, they weren't careful and it came back and is pie in their face, right?
Oh, I totally agree. But Barry, I think Barry wants to jump in.
So well, I just wonder if Scott's trying to raise the point that what didn't happen in the civil court, maybe it should happen in the church court. Is that what your point you're raising, Scott? That maybe we need to bring this to the attention of Kyle's elders. Is that what you're saying?
No.
Barry, Westminster Confession of Faith, chapter 31, paragraph 6. Synods and councils are to determine nothing but what is ecclesiastical in nature. My dog is not an ecclesiastical issue.
A dog terrorizing the city of Winchester.
Terrorizing him in his rib cages dangling out of his jaws. It does strike terror into people's hearts. But I do think, Scott, I think you're right. A prince of, so a lot of this was fun. I will admit that. I think that's coming out. I think it has come out. This was just kind of fun for me. But there is a point here that to truly execute justice, you do need to be precise. And you could carry this over from civil courts into ecclesiastical. I think when we go to admonish people, or when the church is called, the elders are called to censure a person as an act of discipline, you do need to be precise. You need to specify, you know, what has happened and how that action is actually an infringement of the law. So,
yeah. And so this brings up another point. I can go there with you, I suppose. Process is an important thing, right? I mean, Kyle, is that something that you learned here, that there's a process that takes place when charges like this or accusations like this are brought against a person?
Yeah, you know, so obviously I get told in December that we're moving to trial. And as somebody who's never experienced this before, I, you know, in the enthusiastic moment, I was like, fine, I'll see you in court, you know, kind of like, yeah. And the minute I got in my car, I realized I have no clue what that means. Like, the only thing that I was told was, on such and such a date at this time, we are proceeding to trial. And you kind of scratch your head and you wonder, well, I have no idea what to expect. You know, the prosecutor obviously isn't going to be building a case for me. The prosecutor's out to accuse me. And so I did find myself very quickly descending into confusion, kind of like, oh boy, I don't know what I got myself into. The minute I got home, my wife just rolled her eyes and she's like, why did you not pay the $25 fine? Like, what is wrong with you? And so I did find myself obviously, Scott, I called you a lot. I know you don't practice law in Kansas, but with a lawyer background, you're able to give me some framework within which to work. And
I want to stop you. I gave you no legal advice, right? No. I just kind of answered questions for you about the process.
He just answered questions.
That's to keep me out of trouble if this goes to Winchester.
Yes. Yeah, no. So no legal advice at all. More just, like I said, the framework for how to think through or where I can go to get the answers to the questions that I have. So no legal advice, Scott, you are clear. And so you find yourself, you know, trying to get into how does this municipal court work? What is evidence? What is going to be expected? What's the trial outline? And I'll admit, there was one time where I think I actually called you, Scott, and I was just like, I'm like, how am I supposed to figure this out? And you said, Kyle, this is why people have to hire attorneys. Like, like Scott was like, this is why I have a Juris Doctorate. This is what I've done. This is what I'm trained to do. So there is a process that you have to prepare for. And in some sense, it's frustrating, you know, even, you know, to theologize on this a little bit. In ecclesiastical courts, there are agreed upon policies and procedures. Yes, they can be super frustrating to make sure that you are crossing all your T's, dotting all of your I's, and you're not, you know, dotting your T's and crossing your I's. And yet at the end of the day, there's a brilliance even to that agreed upon system, because what it's seeking to do is ensure that everybody gets a fair hearing, whether you're the minority voice, whether you're the defendant or the plaintiff, everybody is working within this set process so that equity can be upheld in the course of the trial.
Barry, do you have something to add? Are you enjoying listening to this? It's kind of fun.
I have some questions, but I'll let you keep going.
No. Why don't you ask a question?
Cross-eyed again? You want to give us?
So you got to get to the actual what happened last night. I think you're going to get us there, Scott, but it's kind of taking a while.
I know. We were afraid that we wouldn't have enough material.
Barry, you've got to do the buildup. The buildup makes it all that much better.
Okay. So Kyle, Barry kind of spoiled this. I don't know if I haven't asked you the outcome. Barry kind of hinted to the outcome of the trial before you started. But tell us what happened last night.
It was on the Daily Scoop.
I didn't listen. Sorry, Kyle.
So the news has gotten out before this podcast.
Okay. Well,
it's okay. So, you know, for the record, this didn't happen last night. We're used to recording on Thursdays, but it's Friday. This actually happened.
Oh, that's right.
But that's neither here nor there. So what happened is there was municipal court. And so our city council pays a district judge to kind of come in and he gets to adjudicate municipal city ordinance violations. And so I arrived at the community center. I was summoned at 6 p.m. and I got there and there were probably eight other people that were sitting in the chairs that I was sitting in. The city council was there with the mayor and the treasurer.
Did you have to take Huckleberry with you or?
No, I didn't. You know,
Huckleberry wasn't summoned.
One look at him and the judge would have said, it's impossible for this dog to run at large. He's too old and he's too large to run. But, you know, and so I got there and I was the last person to get summoned before the judge. There were four other people there with dog violations and every one of them pled guilty in 30 seconds. And so the judge had me come up to the bench. And he said, so what's going on here, Mr. Borg? I see that you are being accused of letting a dog run at large. And I said, well, Your Honor, respectfully, that's not my understanding of the charge. And he said, oh, well, that's what the city prosecutor told me. What's going on here? And I said, well, the court documents actually specify that I violated paragraph D, not paragraph A. And he said, well, what's paragraph D? And I read it for him about the impounding of a dog. You need to pay a fine. I said, you know, Your Honor, our community doesn't impound dogs. My dog's never been impounded. And so I'm kind of lost as to how I could have violated this city ordinance. So he turned to the prosecutor and he got the city ordinances and he just kind of sat there and he just stared at it and he read it. And he looks at me and goes, your dog wasn't impounded? And I was like, no, I don't think the community impounds dogs. And he goes, oh. And he goes, and then the prosecutor interrupts and goes, well, Your Honor, we were just thinking, you know, yeah, we admit we miscited the ordinance. We said paragraph four, it should have been the first paragraph, you know, but he's kind of accused of breaking the whole city ordinance. And she said, so it's kind of the spirit of the law, you know. And I said, well, Your Honor, with all respect, if we're going to take the whole city ordinance into an account, I would just point out that paragraph two requires the city to impound a dog that is at large. Paragraph one says no dog may be at large. Paragraph two, the city shall impound any dog at large. And I said, so it seems to me a little confusing why the city feels that they can arbitrarily enforce a part of this ordinance without enforcing the ordinance in its totality. And then he quieted down and he kept his eyes and he was reading through the city ordinance. And then he looks at me and he goes, I can't speak for the city council, but let me just try to bring some logic to this. Maybe the city is saying, well, we could impound your dog, but we're going to save you money. We're not going to impound your dog. We're just going to issue you a fine. So just pay the fine. We won't impound the dog. That way we can keep fine costs down. Does that make sense to you, Mr. Borg? And I'll admit it's the one time I panicked and I thought, oh no, he's making a rational case. What should I do? So I did what every good debater is taught to do in a moment like that. You play stupid. And I said, well, Your Honor, it doesn't really make that much sense to me. And he looked at me and he goes, oh, I'm not trying to argue. It doesn't make sense to me either. And he said, the way I read the city ordinance is the way you're reading it. And I can't speak for the city council. So I'm not sure what they're doing here. And and he looked at the city prosecutor and he said, you know, what do you want to do? And she said, well, we're ready to go to trial. And the judge said, well, what are you going to do about this argument that you're accusing him of having impounded the dog? And then he looked at me and he said, now, Mr. Borg, you're not denying that your dog might run at large. You're just denying that your dog was impounded. Is that your argument? And I said, well, Your Honor, it's one of my arguments. And at that, he went, oh, you've got more arguments? And I said, well, yes, Your Honor. And he said, well, what's your next argument? I said, well, Your Honor, my next argument is that the city in the accusation that they've drafted has used the word willful. And I said, I'm not an expert in legal terms or Kansas state statutes, but it is my understanding that the word willful is a loaded term. And he goes, well, it certainly is. And I said, my understanding is that willful means with knowing intent. And he said, yes, it does. And I said, well, Your Honor, I've never opened my door and said, hey, Huckleberry, let's go violate a city ordinance together. Go run at large. And he started chuckling a little bit. And he goes, okay. And he goes, do you have more arguments? And I said, I got one more argument, Your Honor. And he said, well, what's your third argument? And I said, well, Your Honor, I'm a little concerned because I just want proof that it was my dog. We have an at-large dog problem in our community. And there are dogs that look like my dog. And I don't want to waste your time and I don't want to waste my time every time somebody sees a yellow dog and decides to bring me to court and impose a fine on me. I want proof that this was my dog. And he said, well, does the prosecutor have any proof? I said, well, Your Honor, I filed a motion of discovery on December 8th. Now I felt super cool being able to drop that. I said,
where did you learn this trick from?
I can't actually reveal my sources. A motion of discovery forces.
Man, I've got goods on both of you.
A motion of discovery forces the opposing side to reveal their evidence. So I was able to tell him I filed a motion of discovery in early December, and he said, "Well, what did you discover?" I said, "He has nothing." And the judge went, "There's no pictures. There's no photographs. There's no videos. There's no definitive evidence that the dog that was seen was yours." And I said, no, Your Honor. And without taking a breath, he said, this case is dismissed. And I said, because I it's not legal advice.
And the fair citizens of Winchester applauded.
And a good friend once told me, you always thank the judge, no matter if it goes in your favor or against. So I just said, thank you, Your Honor. And I walked out. So that my case was dismissed. I chalk it up as a victory.
Yes. Well, Kyle, it's a brilliant story. Whoever told you to tell the judge, thank you, a very smart man or woman, as the case may be.
Or woman, I didn't specify.
I'll out myself on that. I learned that little trick from a movie I watched when I was in college called Good Will Hunting. I don't know if you've seen that movie, but and I explained this to you, Kyle, that in that movie, Matt Damon, who's portraying Will Hunting, is in court and the judge comes down hard on him and he looks at the judge and says, thank you, Your Honor. And I thought, yeah, that's really good. You know, even when things don't go your way, you tell the judge, thank you. You show some respect.
Yeah. So, how do you like them apples, Scott?
Yeah. How do you,
you like my reference?
That's pretty good. I got it. Barry, Barry's did you get lost. Any of that?
No.
All right. What's your next question, Barry?
What do you mean?
Well, you said you had some questions.
No. I mean, what did you mean by the apples reference?
Oh, that's in the movies. That's in the movie.
Yeah. Oh.
Those of us who are cultured understand.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Cultured. The movie that came out in 1994. So.
Hey, was it that long ago?
Hey, I played Who Let the Dogs Out.
Yeah.
That's true. I'm impressed.
But of course, someone told me to do that. So it wasn't really my idea. It was a listener.
That was not me.
What are you going to do now, Kyle? I mean, now you've put the whole town on notice about your dog.
Yeah. So our dog has not, looking at this paperwork, I was served with these documents on November 27th, and our dog has not been seen at large since November 27th. So he will never be seen at large again in the community of Winchester.
Well, and that just robs Winchester of a great friend. You know, these guys that used to have him come out and get there.
Some of the gas station employees messaged me and they were a little beside themselves. So,
well,
but Kyle, go ahead, Scott.
No. I'll let you talk.
Well, I was going to take a bit of a theological spin on this.
Sure.
Unless you're not ready to go there. So, you know, my wife has laughed at me a lot over the last couple of months. And I struggled as a pastor in the community and as a Christian. You know, is this something that I should just roll over? Should I pay the $25 fine? I acknowledge there are times when my dog is at large in the community. What should I do? What can I do? And I did actually wrestle a lot with that question. As a Christian, and especially as a pastor in a small town, do I have a right to do this? Or should I just pay the fine? And I did work through that in my own mind. I felt that tension. And even that night going to trial, I thought, you know, do I just go and say, yeah, fine, whatever, find me. But I do think it is important to remember that we are a nation of rights. And as trite as this example is, somebody is, in civil courts at least, innocent until proven guilty. And those who are going to bring public accusations need to meet a burden of proof. And that working within the system that is established is completely permissible, even for a Christian. And you know, I told Rachel too one day, I said, you know, there are some deeper principles here. There is that fact, like Scott, you mentioned, if you're going to accuse me of something, accuse me of the right thing. And then don't just wave your hand and think, oh, you know, whatever, that's a minor technicality. You know, the judge did not see that as a minor technicality. You brought a public accusation and you miscited the ordinance that you're accusing a citizen of having violated. You know, more than that too, if I can be blunt, and I've told the city this, is the city, you know, yes, they need to equally apply city ordinances. You know, it's frustrating in the federal government. It's frustrating in the state government. It's frustrating in local government when those elected officials who actually have the power to write the ordinances or the laws don't actually abide by the ordinances that they have written. That, you know, we do want consistency. Justice pursues consistency and equity applicable to all people. So that with no animus, you know, I said to the city council and I've said to the mayor, you know, you need to go about this the right way. This is not the right way to do this. And so I think there are some principles of justice here. Again, it's a trite example. I know. Wow, a $25 fine for a dog at large. But I do think it puts some things into perspective.
Well, I'm just glad you didn't use this biblical justification. What Paul said when he said, I appeal to Caesar. I thought you were going to go that route. So,
but Kyle said, I will tell you this. I get a text message from Kyle the day of the trial. And he says, if I lose, I'm thinking of appealing this. Didn't you? You sent that text, didn't you?
I think what I actually said, Scott, was, if I lose this and Rachel will kill me, I need to file a notice of appeal to a district court immediately. So,
but then Scott gave you some more legal advice.
No, Scott actually said, I have no idea what Kansas requires. So
I said, you're going to have to look at what Kansas requires.
Barry, stop trying to back Scott into a corner. This is his best hosting episode, and you keep trying to
Oh, Kyle's just happy because he, you know, this is all about him today. But
yeah. But I also, or go ahead, Scott.
No, please.
I also think, so just to emphasize, I know we're having fun and I'm laughing. I hope and I trust that my attitude and my demeanor, both to the judge and the duly elected officials of Winchester, has been respectful, because I do. I take Romans 13 seriously, even in a little case like this. These are people who have been put into positions of authority. That doesn't mean that I can't work with the processes that are out there. I can't work through the channels and the means that are provided as a citizen. But this really wasn't a moment for me to stick it to the man in some kind of really juvenile. And I just want to emphasize that, because this year in the broader cultural question, you've seen a lot of, how do we as Christian citizens relate to the civil magistrate? Like, what's it look like to interact with them in doing these things? And I'm not holding myself up as the prime example. I guess I kind of am, but I don't mean to be patting myself on the back. But I did take very seriously that even in following the perfectly legal channels that are open to me, you still have to respect those who are sitting in the judge's seat, those who are elected officials in your community, things like that.
So you showed respect to the judge, but the rumor that you thumbed your nose going out of the courtroom at the prosecutor is not true.
Barry, well, the prosecutor is not a civil magistrate, okay? The prosecutor is not an agent of the law in that sense. But for the record, no, Barry, it would be unbecoming of me to thumb my nose at the prosecutor. That did not happen.
Well, this is great. I'm not sure that we've covered anything profoundly theological, although, Kyle, you've given us some good insights.
We haven't covered anything profoundly theological. That's okay to say that.
Wow, Barry. Wow. Thank you.
But I have appreciated this because generally I'm the one on the other side who is prosecuting people. And it was kind of fun for me to hear and talk with Kyle through some of the things and what he needs to think about and where he needs to look and what he needs to do. So that was
the counsel you gave him. Yes.
Yeah. And unfortunately Kyle pointed this out to me as well. He now has a better record before judges than I do. He is 1-0 and I am not. And I do have a loss on my record.
Scott, this victory, like I said on Wednesday night, this victory is as much yours as it is mine.
Oh, those are very incriminating. No,
I can't, because I didn't get any legal advice from Scott.
I'm sure people are going to listen to this and think, oh, what's the big deal? But no, the truth is, just for full disclosure, Kyle, I pointed you in the right direction with certain procedural issues, right? Where to look,
yes.
What you can look at. You came to me with questions and I was able to answer them, like, how do I ask this question? And yep. I can answer that. I'm not giving you legal advice, but, Kyle, how difficult would this have been? And I know we're over time, if you can believe it. How difficult would this have been if you had to just do this on your own?
Well, I'll tell you this. If I had been left to just bury, he would have proved useless to me. So I just want you to know, Scott, how much I value you, because Barry's sitting here mocking us for this episode.
I know he is.
It would have been challenging. It would have been challenging. You know, there are websites. There's even free help advice lines that you can call that help people organize this. But there would have been some challenges. There's a bit of a learning curve. So,
and just for the record, I just checked copyright violations, and you can play a song like 10 or 15 seconds without.
It's called fair use, right? For educational purposes, which this is.
Just so our listeners know who the truly innocent one is in this podcast.
It's just Barry.
Wow. You know what? I'm actually the innocent one. Okay. I'm actually.
Yeah. Kyle is innocent. I mean, he had his case dismissed. I mean, it's been adjudicated. So, well, that's all the time we have. We've actually gone, we were scared we weren't going to get very much material. We've actually gone over 30 minutes, which is not too surprising. But, and listeners, I'm sorry. This was something that has been on our hearts as 3GT co-hosts for quite some time. And we're glad to see it finally get resolved so that Kyle can return to not bringing this up every time we talk and every chance he gets. But we hope you learned something else, something, anything, or were amused by our discussion of Kyle's shenanigans out there in Winchester. We are glad that you joined us for that. We would love to have questions too regarding this case or anything, but feel free to email us at 3gt.xyz@gmail.com if you want to ask a question, suggest a topic, or persecute Kyle for not just paying the $25 fine. That's completely understandable as well. We are also listener supported. So if you feel like dropping us a dime here or there, that would be great too. So on behalf of Kyle and Barry, I just want to thank you for joining us. And until next time, have a great day.